to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the news.
Upon the cave, every foul wicked spirit is a host, the news.
20 minutes, that Derulve on the news. Spread out.
On the news, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really happen to have a serial crime
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Alright, it's Sunday night. It's time for the Outbreak Edition. Tonight we're going to be talking about taking action. We're going to continue the conversation started last Sunday. And if folks in the chat room, if they hear me echoing really bad right now, if they could let me know, because we're still trying to iron some stuff out to make sure that we're solid this evening. But the echo seems to have gone away. So, TC, what's going on, man?
What's up, Jason? I shit just got done, actually. Really straining my brain for the past, like, 3 hours trying to wrap up some pretty heavy concepts and... hopefully I'll get there. I don't think I'm quite done with it yet, but how the hell are you, dude?
I'm doing good, and reading this article that you're just kind of alluding to on eminentmind.info, the discussion about the Puritan mandate and the assimilative automation, it's solid, and you're suggesting, you know, you open it up with a perfect example of how, you know, in the 1980s, you know, we were all shiny, happy people and everything else. Meanwhile, the undercurrent was a little more insidious, a little more dangerous. You know, the world was literally on the brink in the 80s in more ways than one. But we were supposed to be blissfully ignorant of all that. We were supposed to be distracted. And I think your example highlights that perfectly. And then it's definitely an excellent introduction into these ideas of this Puritan mandate and assimilative automation versus a natural calling and intentional considering, you know, things that we've both discussed on more than one occasion. So it says, you know, to be continued right at the bottom of the article, but I can't wait to see how that all pieces out.
Man, I got to tell you, it's really hard to... keep focus of the big picture of what I'm trying to explain and not get sucked away on all the little side vapor trails of things and events and stuff that's happening. The problem is that it's a lot more complicated than it really looks like from the onset. You know, there's so many variables and so many conditionals that have played a part in what's actually come about. I'm not sure. It's reassuring for me that you're getting the drift of it right now, but I'm still not sure that I'm conveying it to the best of how I understand it.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of what we've got going on involves having these discussions, involves having these little jaunts, whether it's on a blog or this forum or what have you. Where you have the opportunity to kind of express your ideas and to start to lay them down. And, yeah, there's going to go off on tangents because those tangents are important. It's a multifaceted situation. And it's just a matter of talking it out and piecing it out and trying to wrap your head all the way around it. And it's not an easy thing. It's going to take time.
Right on, man. It's definitely going to take time. And I certainly don't... I don't know that I've got the final solution in my mind yet, but I'm certainly seeing more and more of the picture the further and further I step back from things. So that's something I'm trying to keep the reader, you know, up to speed, so to say.
Right, and I see that as, again, this discussion we're having, this radio show, the things we're doing on Eminent Mind. The intention here is not necessarily to provide an answer. We're providing potential solutions, potential strategies for what we see going down, while also calling attention to the problem, to the issues we see with a system that is set up to subordinate your innate individuality, your innate humanity in many ways. And we basically allow this to happen. We, in many ways encourage it to happen. So, but definitely, I think it's a solid article, and it's teasing it out, man, one step at a time, trying to get that all figured out.
Right on, man. Well, it'd be really, really helpful if more than just a few people who are reading this were actually commenting on it. I've said over and over, this is not my, brick solid dogma. This is an idea. I'm looking for an exchange. I want to purify it. I want to put, a torch to it and see what purities actually cook out.
Well, it's a matter of taking time. I think more people are going to be drawn to this idea, especially as we get the word out through Blog Talk Radio, through the different forums we're engaged in, that there's this conversation going on. There's a place where these ideas are being discussed, and some of it's heavy stuff, some of it's not so heavy stuff. But if people are, if you're feeling oppressed, if you're feeling like something isn't right, if you're feeling like there's issues out there that you're trying to figure out just how to deal with it, how to wrap your head around it, what perspective to have. I talk a lot about our value structures and how, the things that we consider important have been used against us, have been predetermined for us, and then used against us. So it's a matter of shifting those value structures, of redefining those things for yourself. And unless you're engaged in conversation, we need the reinforcement from other people. That's just the way we are. It's human nature. We need some validation, at least, to suggest that what we're doing is right. If what we're doing doesn't immediately show results, doesn't immediately suggest to us that we're on the right path, well, then it's helpful to have other people along going, that looks like a good idea. So I encourage people to check out eminentmind.info. It's a link I posted right before the show. Check the blog out. We're hoping to have more people not only participate by providing comments, but also actually provide blog material. And I know TC is working on it. It's a very short list of very sharp people that are going to be engaged in providing blog material, providing their articles and their ideas. Speaking of which, I also wanted to mention, while we're not getting necessarily direct input, direct feedback from folks about, Eminent Mind, not in, the way we necessarily like with comments on the actual the blog or the forum, we are, or you are at least, getting some recognition from some far-flung corners of the internet. I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste this link in here. Hopefully I'm not throwing you for a loop on this. Messiah Bay, Warlock Asylum of the Necronomicon Tradition. And if you haven't seen this blog, this Necronomicon Tradition blog, it's Papers in the Attic, Assignment Necronomicon Practitioner's Journal. And apparently it's more than just Messiah Bay who's engaged in this, which I wasn't aware of that originally. But this thing is layers and layers deep. It's not all gold. It's not all necessarily brilliant. It doesn't always it's not something I can always agree with. But it is, if you want to get deep into something and see how it can be twisted and turned and moved around and how it, different pieces of the puzzle fit together, this is definitely one place to look. And Warlock Asylum, who, I don't know, I guess the fair way to put it is that we've crossed swords with this guy before, We've had our debates. We've had our ins and outs with this guy. Well, Warlock Asylum took the time to honor T.C. Downey, our T.C. Downey, with a 2011 Man of the Year Award, the Necronomicon Traditions 2011 Man of the Year Award. Which, I don't know what that might mean to our listeners, but what it means as far as this organization is concerned, this movement, this group is concerned, is that TC has actually been instrumental in creating mediums that allow the novice and the adept to acquire information and interact on the common ground. At one point, TC allowed or hosted a debate about the Necronomicon on the Ooze. And TC's always, you know, and I agree totally with this. I think it's a well-deserved honor that, you know, you are an innovator, man, and you are somebody seeking information by bringing people together and getting conversations going. You're the kick in the ass, basically, that all of us need to actually do some shit. So it's very cool, and it's a big deal, too, when people that we've not always been charitable to step up and go, you know what, your contribution is worthwhile.
Right on, man, right on. I mean, I'm certainly, you know me well enough to know that I'm not one who's really, I don't know, seeking out some kind of fame or a name for myself, so to speak. It's always like a secondary kind of effect that happens for what I'm really trying to do. You know, my idea is simply this: we have been scattered. People who, you know, think in the way that we do, and I don't mean that every thought's exactly the same, but I mean that there's a general congruence in our thinking, have been, whether consciously or not, forcibly scattered throughout this world. Or maybe it's just that we develop in this manner. And for me, it's not enough to sit around and only have the immediate area around me to explore and then live vicariously through, you know, whatever information is fed to me through large media, but it's more important to get an exchange of actual interpersonal exchange of information going. You know, I learn more from talking to people than I could learn in 5 or 6 textbooks, and I've tried it both ways, so I know. You know, I certainly pick up a lot more from the expressions of people and, you know, it's just their overall mannerism about certain things and whatever than I could ever get from any kind of instructional guide. And I'm actually a relatively studious person, so I think that speaks a lot for how much information is actually being, I don't know, interfered with in the transference from one person to another when we separate ourselves and do things in these artificial manners.
Right. Well, I totally agree. I mean, this scattering that you're talking about, it's not just a scattering of people that necessarily think like us. It's a scattering of pretty much everybody. The systematic encapsulation of individuals. I mean, it's one thing to be an individual and be aware and be engaged in some process, but it's another thing when your individuality is meaningless. And as long as you feel like you're out there and you're alone and you can't do anything, that's exactly what the system wants to do. That, you know, you can only rely on the processes that are established in the traditional sense, in the mundane sense. That's the only option. Those are the only options you have, and you're out there on your own. That there's no one else for you to reach out to. There's no one else that thinks like you. There's no one else that shares the same concerns that you do. So you're by yourself. So you might as well, you know, sit out and shut up and do your job, or, you know, whatever it is whatever you're supposed to do. And this scattering that you're talking about, I see it's just a scattering of awareness, a scattering of focus. That there's so many things that so many distractions, so many shiny baubles that we're supposed to watch being juggled, that we're supposed to juggle ourselves. But there's the opportunity to actually set things down and go, you know what, these are the real problems that concern me. These are the real issues that have some meaning in my life, that actually have some impact on what I got going on. And I need to focus on these things, not all this bullshit, not all this noise. So but definitely, again, I think this recognition is just for what we're talking about, is that you're one of the people, you know, helping try to bring all these things in focus. And even though, you know, I know you're doing this, you do this whether anybody noticed or not, man. If you only had 5 people that you were talking to on the phone every fucking week, that'd be your thing. That's what you would do. But it is. It's, you know, it's reaching out to these different people. It's making some things happen. So not to, pat you on the back too much about this, but I still think it's really cool that especially this is the thing that blows my mind. We haven't, again, we were not too kind to this guy, especially in the beginning. We, neither of us, And he's been, you know, more than courteous, has actually, you know, reached out to us and everything else. It's been very cool. And now this on top of all, you know, everything else, you know, stepping up. And it's not just a matter of saying he likes what you're saying, but he likes it so much that he's telling all his people, everybody that, that reads his blog, everybody that he deals with, check this guy out because this guy is where it's at. So it's very cool, man. It's a very cool honor, I think.
And I'm certainly honored by it, man. I certainly don't want to kind of take that away. It's not that I'm above it or below it or anything. I guess you could just say that, in a way, I guess I'm a little bit, I don't know, a little embarrassed, but I don't want to say embarrassed. I just, you know, I appreciate the recognition, and I think a lot about this guy, too. I mean, the fact that we were as rough with him as we were in the beginning, and that he has continuously, you know, extended the olive branch and you know, continuously stood his ground, but at the same time been, I don't know what the word I want to use is, but... Yeah, anyway, I mean, the dude himself is a smart guy. He's a good guy. I have invited him to also author on Eminent Mind, and hopefully we'll see some excellent articles come from him. He's kind of got a similar background to us, and a lot of the stuff that he's read and a lot of the philosophy that he perpetrates in his own articles is... Yeah, you know, it's derivative of things that have influenced me as well. So it's kind of neat to see how the petals of the flowers are just so slightly shaped different. You know what I mean?
Right on, right on. And if you don't check it out to see what was said about TC, check it out to see who comes out of the woodwork to piss on TC's parade. All the, you know, it's the usual suspect, basically. That's it's mind-blowing how quickly, if TC gets any recognition for any fucking thing, this guy is right there to, you know, to try to take a shit on it. And even at that, he tends to fail. So, some funny shit.
Yeah, it is pretty hilarious. I was actually kind of impressed at the people that, you know, people I expected would come to my defense did, and then people who I didn't expect or had no idea would still stepped up to say, hey, you know, this dude's out of his fucking mind. So, you know, that part was very cool as well. So, needless to say, I guess, you know, we spent almost, 20 minutes now rambling on about... this crap. We should probably get into why shit sucks, because everybody who's listening wants to hear that.
Right on.
Right on.
The number is 347-989-1371. All right.
Yeah, I'm muting you. I missed the mute button on my microphone. Again, it seems to be relative to this. It's so weird because last weekend there wasn't a problem with it at all, and this weekend there's a problem, and I haven't done anything different. But if I miss the mute button, that's when you're echoing. It seems like it's so.
Right on. Well, we'll work out the technical end of it, and you know, I think TC found his mute button. So, what we're going to be talking about tonight, this is an extension of the show last week, and it was a 2-hour show last week. We got this show scheduled for 2 hours. If you want to call in, the phone number is going to be 347-989-1371, and we've kind of decided that this is just going to be the ongoing conversation. If you kind of want to get a little deeper involved in the conversation, check out eminentmind.info. But what we're talking about is taking some action, trying to, you know, take some steps to deal with what we see going down, you know, calling attention to the different problems that we see out there and then taking steps to try to do something about it. And I think last week we kind of really, you know, explored up and down just in a general way, and it took 2 hours, but just in a general way, the different issues we're seeing. One of our biggest concerns, I think, right now is the economic collapse of, frankly, the Western world, not just the United States, but Western civilization as we know it. And the Western civilization, the world economy, the global economy, for better or for worse, is tied to the Western economy. So it's gonna, you know, it's gonna get rough. It's gonna get ugly. And we're probably looking at the, you know, just the collapse of this thing. It's become bloated. It's gotten out of control. And this isn't something that's been cited since capitalism was first suggested as an economic model. It's problematic because eventually the resources that are available to the people for their use find their way into the hands of the conglomerates, find their way into the hands of the elite. So you end up with the workers, the drones, being in a position where all they can do is support that pyramid, the elitists, the wealthy, the industrialists, the conglomerates, who at one time they were making the money. They had their nose to the ground. They were setting up the factories. They were, you know, they were establishing the means for production. But eventually, you know, when you got to talk about companies like GE, when you talk about companies like Disney, we talk about companies that they're no longer just in the business of doing whatever they do. They also make their money by owning other businesses, by being engaged in other markets, by actually swaying industries one way or the other. It's no longer a matter of those people meet their workers on a day-to-day basis. They just look at numbers and make decisions based on those numbers. So we've reached that point now where it's the, you have a group of the elite, basically, the very, very wealthy, who are outside of, you know, out of touch as far as the rest of the world is concerned. I've seen some interesting data on this. When we talk about, you know, there's a lot of, like the tax discussion. We talk about how the top 1% pay the majority of the taxes in the United States, which is absolutely true. But then the majority of the wealth in the United States is held by 400 different families here in the U.S., and none of these families actually pay income tax because they don't make an income. So the top 1% of income producers pay the majority of the taxes in the United States, but the majority of the people that actually have wealth here in the U.S. pay no taxes as far as income tax is concerned. And these are the kinds of things that are leading to the economic collapse, because people like you and I, who grew up with the idea that America was the land of opportunity, are watching as opportunity just dries up. And there's less and less available to us, available to our children. And we're starting to wonder why we should be invested in this system.
Right on, man. I think one of the things that I was kind of pointing to in that last article is the fact that one of the strategies that we held up until more recent times that has enabled people who aren't as wealthy to survive and actually flourish is the fact that up until a certain point in history, we existed in an extended family situation. You could find, you know, generations of families living on a piece of land, and so they were, you know, contributing financially as well as, you know, sharing the resources, making it a little easier to survive. But what has actually happened is they found a way to break that up. They've started breaking it up through regulation and law, you know.
Right, and a shift in our value structures as well. It used to be that, you know, you'd have, just like you're saying, three or four generations living on the same plot of land. Well, that was their land. They consider it was theirs to do with as they will. That opportunity doesn't exist anymore in the United States. You might buy a home, but you don't own it. You own a piece of it. You share it with the government. You share it with the state. Your land is not yours to do with as you will necessarily. There's restrictions. There's limits to what you can do. If we were to go out and buy a plot of land, I couldn't necessarily put a trailer in the backyard and put my kids in it, and put another trailer in the front yard and put my father in it. It just wouldn't happen. The system, the authorities would come down and put a stop to that. And it used to be that we had this extended family that we could look to. You would minimize the amount that you needed to provide for everyone. You had one house with, you know, a dozen rooms, or, you know, you had multiple structures on the property, and most of the outbuildings were just that. They were one room or two rooms, and it was just meant to sleep in, while the rest of the, you know, the rest of the big building was where everybody actually congregated and did their actual living. And, you know, I don't think in modern times is necessarily the case that you'd want to do this, but you raised your own crops. You grew your own food. You handled your own cattle and everything. Well, in modern times, and this is something we see, I think we're moving towards because children are staying with their parents longer and longer. Your adult children end up contributing by going out and getting a job and then helping provide for the income of the household. And I think what you're talking about, TC, what you start to mention in this article and things we've kind of discussed where we start to get into a family unit, per se, something less than a family but more than a community in my mind, where we're related not by blood, not by genetics, but by ideology and mutual benefit. So we invest in one another's benefits. We invest in one another's well-being. And regardless of the social value structures that, you know, are posed that, we start working towards greater security through our own means.
Right, absolutely. That's actually hopefully where I will end up with at this at the end of this article. It's been kind of difficult to get there, but the overall idea is certainly sound. If you have a region of area that is occupied by people who share a similar idea set, then there's more cooperation and collaboration going on within the community, and the community begins to actually focus on what's best for the occupants of the community and not what's best to, I don't know, match the standard of Jonestown next door.
Right, right. It shouldn't be a matter of chasing trends. It should be a matter of just doing what you need to do to support you and your own, your family, or in this case, this extended unit that we're going to be discussing. To participate in this, and this has long been an argument of mine, to participate in this kind of model, the thing we're talking about, this extended family unit, you might have had a lazy brother or sister. You might have had an uncle that just got drunk all the time or whatever, and that happened. But if you look at the majority of the members of a family unit, they already knew. There was an innate sense of what needed to be done. It was programmed into them. It was taught to them that you needed to go out and pull your own weight, that you had a responsibility to those around you, and it was a joy to engage in that responsibility. It was a sense of pride to give of yourself for those around you who you knew would do the same for you. So you were getting something out of it. There was a selfish motive behind it because you knew that you were, being protected by these people, and that your support of these people just reinforced your protection, reinforced what you had. We don't have that today. It's all about me and what can I get. And, I don't want to give anything into it unless I'm going to get something out of it. And I'm not willing to invest in it until, I see that benefit. It's this mentality that we have that the only guaranteed, worthwhile thing to chase that's going to provide for me is a paycheck. I'm not going to rely on other people unless there's, some sort of recourse, which might make sense in the short term, but in the long term, it's just a route to slavery, basically.
Absolutely. One of the things that I kind of wanted to touch on, and I'm sure this is probably the best point that there's going to be to touch on it, is I wanted to address the fact that some people might assume that we have some kind of the good of the one is, or the good of the many is more important than the good of the one. And that's not necessarily the case at hand here. Rather, it's coming to an understanding that you know, without the sun, the trees won't grow. Without the rain, the trees won't grow, be green. Without, you know, without the winds, the trees won't pollinate. We suffer the same type of affliction. No matter how separate, how unattached we believe we are from the planet that we inhabit, we still suffer from the same symptoms it does.
Right, and it goes, I think, even further than that. We've kind of, we talked about this in other forums. This is an idea that's been long in development, that you as an individual might be the most outstanding, self, sustaining individual on the face of the planet. But whatever you have, whatever you build for yourself, whatever it is that you accomplish, whether it's, you're able to grow your own food, you're able to, whatever it is that you provide for your own sustenance, if you're by yourself, how many people will it take it away? 3, 4, 5? If you're challenged by a group of people who aren't willing to work for their own other than taking it from you, how many people will it take to take those things away? So self-sufficiency has its limits. There's a limitation to how much you can do, how much you can accomplish, and how much you can protect, which is when you have to reach out to other people who are of the same mentality, who are willing to, you know, negotiate with you to see to the group's overall sustainability. And then you are more likely to be viable. You are more likely to survive that situation where you're faced with 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 marauders or whatever who are coming to take whatever you have. Whether we're talking about actual, you know, food stores, your property, your women, your life, or we're talking about your job. We're talking about your position in society. Anything. It's having, working together, but having those individuals who are already well on the way to self-sustainability, working together and pulling their own weight, then sharing what they have for mutual benefit. That's what we're moving towards, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the thing of it is that we have to be very careful. We have to be careful in whether we believe that the governing body that we have over us is actually looking out for our best benefit or not. And part of the idea of these mass social organisms that we've developed, these countries, is that very sense of security that we're talking about, that they provide this level of protection. But there's nobody contesting our land at this point. Why are we still being governed by them?
Right. And it's that dependence on that group. We've abdicated completely our responsibility in our own defense. We've abdicated completely our responsibility to our own survival. You know, it's a matter of you go get whatever job you need to go get, and you go, you work for the system, and, you know, whatever job you have, unless you completely avoid paying taxes, unless you're completely working, underground, you're working as part of that system. You're engaged in it. So you go do, whatever it is you're supposed to do. You meet whatever obligations. You rent the right apartment. You meet the right girl. You do all, you do whatever you're supposed to do. And you're engaged in it and dependent on that system. Because if it all goes away tomorrow, that's the other concern. Whether you're being used by the system that you're engaged in, or whether it all disappears tomorrow or changes radically tomorrow, you find yourself unprepared, basically, because you no longer have the skills necessary to support yourself, to sustain yourself.
Right. I think at one point, America actually had a war over this very idea. Actually, I think every war America's ever had has sort of been over this idea, at least here on our soil. The Civil War, most people want to think that it was about giving freedom to black people, but we all know that it was the states trying to, at that point, keep a hold of their sovereignty and their level of jurisdiction, and not be susceptible to federal mandate. And well, we see how this turned out. what has happened is, you know, now not only is there this huge distance between the individual and the governing organization of the state, but then on top of that, there's an even bigger distance until you reach the supreme level of government that's, you know, existing on the federal level. And so you really don't get to choose who you would have represent you, because I guarantee you nine out of 10 people would, you know, honestly say that they didn't, you know, vote for Bush because, you know, Bush was the absolute best candidate for what they wanted, you know, their representative to be. But he was the closest thing that they could get to. Their choices are limited.
Well, and that vote, who are you, you know, it's, you know, are you picking the light beer or the full flavor beer, basically? It's still, you know, it's still beer. These people that you're voting on, these people that actually get into political power, they all come from a very limited pool within our society. And it's this limited pool that governs us. It's this limited pool that you come from. If you don't come from that limited pool, you're not going to get very far in politics more often than not. And it's, why are we advocating any of our individual responsibility to these people? I mean, it's understandable, and this is something I actually have an article I'm working on that I'm looking to post on Eminent Mind here this week. I'm still trying to tweak it. But I'm talking about this idea as using the same model, the slime man model that we've talked about often, where it's not just a matter of going totally against the grain, going totally against the current, and opposing all manner of politics and laws and everything else, because that's the way to get your ass swatted down. But it's also not, you know, being totally engaged in the system, being totally subservient to the system. That's a matter of going, you know, going both ways, doing both things at once, cherry picking what works here and what works there. So while you're, you know, while you're casting your vote for whoever or whatever, depending on which way you lean politically, you're also making sure that no matter how that person votes in their forum, no matter what that person ends up doing as far as, you know, their political career is concerned, you're still taking care of the things you need to take care of. You're still making sure that you are able to, you know, see to your own needs.
Right on, man. I mean, and that's what it's really all about. When we break down this whole idea of left-hand path, ultimately it leads to development of the self, but not just development of who you are or how you think, but the development of the ability to take care of yourself indefinitely. And I think that that's something that we're certainly being disenfranchised with.
The person we opened up speaking about in the show that recently honored TC with this Man of the Year for his movement, he had an interview recently, and one of the statements he made that I thought was interesting was about financial independence. And I actually had to email him about, you know, what it is he meant by financial independence. When we think about financial independence, when we hear that term, what we think about, because this is the way we're programmed, think about this is what you're told. Financial independence means having so much money that you no longer have to worry about the bills getting paid. You no longer have to worry about, you know, making the rent or whatever. You are, or your income stream is so secure that it's no longer a consideration for you. You don't have to sweat it. Well, how many people actually live in that situation? I mean, even if you hit the lottery tomorrow, there's a chance it could all go away. And look at the way the economy's going right now. What is your dollar actually worth? What's behind that money? Nothing. Not a fucking thing. Not even gold, which in itself is next to worthless. Try eating gold. Try doing something with fucking gold and tell me what the value is of that shit. So when he was talking about financial independence, what he was actually talking about was independence from the need for finances. You're finding a way to be self-sustaining without needing the system's healthy lucre, basically, without needing the system's, you know, notes to do things with. So I think he's got an interesting, you know, idea that he's developing, that he's actually seeking some means of self-sustainability that doesn't require engaging in that economic system, the economic system that we, as we all look around, as we all see it, you know, 1 out of 15 people right now are, or I'm sorry, 15 out of 100 people right now are unemployed, or you know, they're not even looking for a job anymore because the jobs just aren't out there. So as we're watching all this fall apart, being invested in chasing the dollar and thinking that's going to lead to financial independence, that's a fool's dream.
Right on, man. And the sad part is that most people will not become aware of this until it's far too late. I mean, hell, it might already be far too late. When I really drive around my area, I'm always surprised by the number of people that are actually homeless or vagrant, as they're referred to. It's astounding because it's not just old crazy people anymore. I mean, back in the day when I was young and I saw somebody who was homeless, 9 out of 10 times in my mind it was, not in my mind, but what I saw was that, that they had some kind of mental instability or they were social hermits or whatever, and they just were unable to actually become, productive members in society. But now it's not the case. I see young men that are 10 years younger than me and better physical shape than me. I see whole families, grubbing it up, sleeping under expressways, makeshift tents in the woods, asking for $5 here and there on or asking for a dollar, asking for change, whatever it is, because there's no opportunity for them to ever come back from, the decline that they've had. And I'm honestly, at this point, kind of afraid of that kind of thing myself. The situation that I'm in personally at this point in time, it's kind of, it's scary, man. It really is when it's put in perspective with the rest of the world. It's kind of frightening because I'm perfectly capable. Not only am I capable, I'm skilled. But does that mean that I will secure some kind of sustainable income anytime soon or in time to, prevent the total economic collapse of my own person? I'm not really sure. I guess I should say that I'm fairly confident, or at least I'm optimistic in that, I'll get over this little lump and that I'm ingenuitive enough to navigate my way through this thing. But what happens if I'm wrong?
Well, what happens is no matter what your level of education, no matter what your skill set, there just isn't the opportunity for you. I mean, this is what we're seeing going on right now. A bachelor's degree is the new high school diploma of the market, of the job market. It used to be, you had to have a high school diploma to get a job, but you could get a decent job with a high school diploma. Now, if you don't have a bachelor's degree, good luck getting that job because the competition's gotten that hot and the bachelor's degree has gotten that meaningless. And as far as the thing you're saying about homelessness, I wanted to call to point something that you were talking about how you're afraid or there's a fear. And I have this fear too. I have kids and everything else. There's a fear of homelessness. There are people out there right now, PhDs out there right now, who are homeless by choice, who made this decision. It's a lifestyle choice. And what they've done is basically they've seen the system as being full of shit. They see that it's flawed. They see that it's, what it is, and that it's, it devalues humanity, the system. So they have chosen not to engage in it. And this guy, I was reading about this guy, he's traveled the world. He's gone all over the place, and he doesn't have a fucking dime to his name, and he says he hopes he never will. He sees things, he experiences things, and he's the dude, like I said, he's got a PhD. So it's not like he couldn't go out and get a job. He's written a few books about it and everything else. But so there's it's one thing that I think the thing we're afraid of is not necessarily being homeless, okay? Because if they were to take all this away from me right now and say, go out in the woods, you're on your own, we're not going to take your family away from you, we're not going to fuck with you, you just don't have shit anymore. Part of me like good, because that means I can take care of the shit out of the way I want to take care of it. I can take that risk. I can take that chance. and not have to worry about somebody coming and fucking with me because I'm doing things my way. What we're concerned about is it not being a matter of choice, where you're homeless and now, you know, the level of options you have is that much more narrow because you are homeless. It's not, it should be liberating, and it's not.
Right, I agree with that, but I think that just to correct a little bit, at least as far as the area that I live in, there are consequences for making that choice. It's not like you're just homeless and you can go into the woods and do what you need to. The people are constantly there's 300 people in the immediate area that I live in every day that are new faces that appear on this website called mugshots.com. It's actually TampaBay.mugshots.com. Of them, I've estimated that it's something like 60% that are actually vagrancy related. You know, that they're sleeping in the woods and some cop pulls along and, well, you know, the rich guy down the street doesn't like the fact that you're sleeping in the woods, so he wants you arrested. He wants you taken to jail. They take them to jail. These people have gone as far as to, you know, use their food stamps that they receive from the government to purchase bottled water, and sell the bottled water for a dollar, you know, on the corners of streets. But some rich guy decides that, you know, this is a distraction. This is a disgusting thing to look at. So now they're no longer allowed to panhandle either, which means that the one chance that they had to, you know, create some kind of revenue or profit and take advantage of the few things that are left that the system actually will do for them is being stripped away from them. So they don't even have that opportunity. You know, you can't just go out and kill a gator for meat. You'll be arrested for, you know, being a trapper. you see what I'm saying?
No, I do see what you're saying. Absolutely. And just as I was saying, there would be consequences if you and I were to be homeless. I mean, I know that if I were to be homeless, that would be the end of my relationship. Not because my girlfriend doesn't love me, not because she doesn't want to be with me, but we have children. And, you know, her first obligation is to her child. It's not, you know, not even necessarily to me. It's to her children. And my first obligation is to my children. So the first thing the state would do to get me back in line is tell me that I don't have access to my kids anymore. And that's just not going to fucking happen. But, you know, exactly what you're saying, that you get burned for vagrancy, you get burned for panhandling, whatever. Now, part of the thing there is these people that I think I'm reading about who are homeless as a lifestyle choice, they don't necessarily engage in those behaviors because, again, they're disengaging from the system. So they would see panhandling, you know, is begging for money as, you know, being engaged in that system at the lowest possible tier. But, you know, you're asking for money. You're asking instead of finding a way to do it for yourself. And I agree with you. You go out and kill a gator, and you're going to get nailed for being a poacher, or worse, for killing an endangered species or whatever. But it's a matter of a shifting value system. There's plenty to eat out right outside your front door, basically. But it means that you have to eat things that you've been taught all your life aren't food. That's one of the problems we have. You know, it's as free range human beings, a lot of the shit that's out there that right now we're told don't even touch that because it's filthy. We eat the hell out of that, and other cultures do.
Right on, man. Something I wanted to bring up real quick, and then I noticed that Zach's on the line, so if Zach will just hang on, we'll get him on here. But I saw an article, I'm not really sure where it is I saw it. It was some little news clip that was on YouTube or something. It was about this, I guess there were maybe Mormons or something or another, Seventh-day Adventists or something. They secured a plot of land somewhere out in, you know, the plains or in a desertous region, something like that. And they actually had began to construct you know, different residencies, and they had a communal style of living there. Well, the area that they live in got a hair up their ass and sent code enforcement in, and because they weren't actually connected to the city's water, because they weren't connected to the city's power, because they weren't connected to the city's sewage, because they chose to deal with all of these things and participate outside of the system. And it's not like they weren't paying their property tax or anything. They were paying that stuff, but everything else that they were doing was in a manner that didn't rely on this economic monster that we are dealing with on a daily basis. They were ultimately going to be forced off their land. The lead guy of this community was actually jailed for it. And they were cited with multiple violations of codes. And from my understanding, they were getting ready to rip down everything that these people had built up.
And it's because these people chose to go outside the system and do something radical for themselves, which is why I'm, and again, this article is going to be posted here later this week, but I'm advocating a strategy that addresses that issue. It's the same thing when you're talking about Gurdjieff, who talked about escaping a prison. You can't rush the walls. If you rush the walls, the guards are going to notice you're trying to escape. You have to find a subtle way to escape. You have to find a subtle way to disengage. It has to be intentional. It has to be consistent, this process. And it has to be, step by step. It takes time. It's an erosion of the shackles that are around your neck. It's not simply breaking the chains. Because if you break the chains, well, then they're going to put stronger chains on you. That's the way it goes down. So I guess you wanted to bring Zach on the line?
DC? Yes, yeah, we're going to go ahead and bring him on. He's called back a couple of times. He he's either having technical difficulties or he wants to talk, so we'll find out real quick.
All right.
Here we go. Zach, you're on the air.
Hey, guys, can you hear me now?
Barely now.
Okay, I'm just listening, guys. Just put me on mute, please.
All right, we'll do that. I had to mute my mic so I couldn't respond to him, so that was kind of up to you. But I didn't want to echo on top of the feedback we were already getting there. you know what's absolutely amazing to me, man, is ever since we began, holding these kind of discussions here on the Ooze. It seems like a lot of the participation has dropped off. People are walking around in this denial, and they don't want to really hear how bad things are. They don't want to be forced to look at a situation outside of their own. You know, they've been working for a Radio Shack for 15 years, and they do a really good job. So why would Radio Shack get rid of them? But here's the deal. We've been pushing on a statewide and federal level to reduce the minimum wage as they claim it to be a motivation for corporations to bring the jobs back here on American soil. But this is kind of what I've got to say about that whole deal. Why should we have to, live with less so that they can make a profit here and hire cheap labor? Why shouldn't we be forced to reevaluate the actual cost of things in comparison with the suffering to acquire it?
Right. No, I agree with that. I agree that it should be a matter of the game shouldn't be set against us. And that's what we're dealing with. The United States, our economy is a great big casino. Okay, when you walk into a casino, we're all playing in the casino. We're all gambling. We're all gambling that our job that we go out and get is going to be there tomorrow. We're all gambling that the wage you earn is going to be sufficient for your needs. That you're going to be able to pay your rent and buy your groceries and pay your car insurance and pay all the other little minutia things that you have to meet the bare minimum standards of our society. we're all gambling that it's going to be enough. We're all gambling that we're going to be able to do that, and that we're going to have some satisfaction out of our lives, that we're going to be excited about getting up in the morning and being who we are, not just fucking depressed all the time. And I mean, other countries, Canada and shit like that, people suffer like that. It's a matter of, you know, there's just, you know, my job sucks and there's no other thing, there's nothing else I can do. There's nothing I can do about it. This is the mentality that's been pushed upon us. And when we're talking about people, you know, who bow out of this kind of discussion, it is just because we sit there and say, hey, you need to look at this and you need to start thinking about what it is you're going to do. And we want to hear what your ideas are. And most people, as you know, as you pointed out, even if, and it's a sad statement, but even the people in the circles we travel in, these people that are supposed to be, you know, fiercely independent, self-responsible, self-sustaining, they have no clue. They, you know, I'll have a job or whatever. I'll live in my mom's basement. Whatever the fucking answer is, it's bullshit. So strategizing is what we're doing, is what we're hoping to do. We want people to talk about their ideas, you know, and we're calling attention to the problem. And we have ideas. Eminent Mind is where a lot of these ideas are going to be published and everything else. This show is going to be where these ideas are discussed. Speaking of this show, we got about 5 minutes left to the bottom of the hour or what have you, to the or top of the hour, till we've done an hour worth of show. I can keep going for another hour because I got other things I want to touch on tonight. We've got a few listeners who've stuck it out through the entire show. First of all, TC, if you want to stick it out, I say we just keep rolling on for another hour. And our listeners, if they want us to stick it out, just indicate in the chat room or call in 347-989-1371 and let us know what you think.
I'm down for talking another hour, dude. As far as I'm concerned, it's my duty to myself, to my family, to the people that I hold in high regard or have, you know, endeared in one way or the other. It is my duty to spend this at least this 2 hour block talking about this shit. I'm gonna talk about it until my face turns blue, and you know, from there I'll talk about it some more. And not only am I going to talk about it, but you know, I intend to actually begin implementing some things in my life that will actually push towards, you know, towards getting out of this whole deal and taking care of my own. But it's difficult to actually form a good strategy that will allow you to, you know, keep the barbarians at bay, so to speak, while you maintain, you know, some kind of tranquil Shangri-La inside your own castle, so to speak. So,
I think it's important that we start talking about formulating exit strategies. And again, this is an article that'll be out later on this week that I'm working on, and I think I've even called it the exit strategy or something. But basically, every person that, you know, has these same concerns, that feels like, you know, there are fewer opportunities, that they're being oppressed, that there's less and less available to them, and more limitations on what it is they can do, that we all need to start figuring out what our own exit strategy is going to be. And the people who grew up during the Depression, during the Great Depression in the 1930s or whatever, they have that mentality. The people that survived the Holocaust in Germany, they have that mentality that, you know, there's certain things, common sense things that you do so that if the shit hits the fan, you minimize the impact on yourself. So you might not be, this is the Slyman mentality again, you might not be hoping for the collapse. You might not be rallying against the system, but you're damn sure making sure that you're independent of it. You're damn sure making certain that you can survive without it. So as far as negative strategy is concerned, one of the things I'm doing is trying to, again, I've talked about it already, reducing my dependence on financing, reducing my dependence on cash. And one of the things I'm doing, it kind of seems the opposite direction of that very idea, is I'm trying to divest myself of a lot of military possession, or not military, material possession. I've got a lot of stuff, man. I got an apartment full of stuff. And George Carlin talked about this. You get an apartment and you fill it full of stuff. And then you move to a bigger house or whatever and you fill that with stuff. You always have more stuff, and this stuff just kind of follows you around. In Fight Club, Tyler Durden, one of his quotes was, "The things you own end up owning you." And I've realized that, you know what, if tomorrow, if I had to move, if I had to get the hell out of here tomorrow, I'd be leaving behind thousands of dollars of stuff that is meaningless to me. And you know what this stuff is? This stuff, all these things are symbols of some self-identity I have, something that when people come into my apartment, I want them to see and I want them to be impressed by it, and I want them to associate these things with some aspect of myself. You know, I could just tell them about me and not have to have the little fucking bullshit, you know, there as a symbol of who I am. So divesting myself of these material possessions, and it is a lucrative process. I have been making money hand over fist, you know, getting rid of collectibles, getting rid of books, getting rid of, you know, crap I don't need, getting it down to just my art supplies, my tattoo supplies, and the things that, you know, my family need to feel comfortable. My children want for nothing. They have all kinds of stuff, you know, and I want to make sure they're happy. But as far as my needs are concerned, I need none of this shit. So that's one of the things going on, divesting myself of these material possessions. The other thing is I'm not going out and buying any new shit. I'm not trying to acquire anything new. I'm trying to take control of my finances, making sure that, you know, more money goes into my pocket than goes back into the system. When money is going back into the system, I'm buying shit that I think I will need when that system collapses. I'm buying shit that I think will be of value when that system goes away.
Right. As you know, I've already undergone this process. I'm actually to the point myself where I could pack everything that I own into the back of a pickup truck and go. I don't have anything else to trade off for money. The few things that I do have left would be, suffice just enough money for a long distance journey. You know, like say for instance, if I decided Alaska was, you know, the place to go to get out away from all of this shit, I could sell the few things of material value that I have left, and I have just enough to, you know, maintain my vehicle and make the trip across the country. So I'm on that same page myself too. Having that ability to just get up and go is a brilliant notion. I mean, there's actually, it's not a new one either. I think about the wagoneers in the old frontier days. I think about the European gypsy, and I think about how, you know, tribes of Indians were migratory, and I think humans are kind of fooling themselves if they believe that they can take up residence in one area and, you know, it forever remain a liberal situation.
Right on. And I mentioned Holocaust survivors earlier that have this mentality. But these folks, you know, when Germany was basically losing its mind collectively, and going after these different people and these, you know, these different groups of people, there's a famous, I don't know if it's a poem or what have you, that said, you know, when they came after the unions, I wasn't a union member, so I said it had nothing to do with me. When they came after the homosexuals, I said I wasn't a homosexual, so it had nothing to do with me. And eventually they were the only ones left. These Holocaust survivors, a lot of them have, and the only thing I can think of are, to call it, is basically go bags, okay? So basically the idea was that you had under your bed suitcases, two or three suitcases of your absolute essential, you know, these are the things you have to have, so that if you needed to get the hell out of Dodge overnight, you would leave it all, the rest of it behind, and get the hell out of Dodge. Now, I'm not waiting for the alarm to sound. I'm not waiting for, you know, the shit to hit the fan, and I know you're not either. Where the focus is, we're getting light. We're getting prepared to travel. And with the, as far as the Sly Man aspect of this is concerned, my thinking is, you know what, if everything goes great, if the economy recovers and America becomes the land of opportunity and everything, all the bullshit that we were fed as children, if all of it were to somehow come true, okay, and I'm on the fucking ballot for president of the United States, all of it comes true, basically, well, then I'm no worse for wear for doing this. I'm no worse for wear for you know, divesting myself of some useless shit. But if the shit does hit the fan, then I'm a little bit lighter, I think, than the next guy and can make the move if I need to make it. The other thing would be the same mentality that, you know, the people during the Depression had. You need to invest in things that you know you need to survive, actual commodities that are worthwhile. And I've mentioned this in other shows, and I know this is kind of a radical idea. You hear people talking about these same ideas in other talk shows and everything else. They talk about buying gold. There's a commercial for, and, you know, it seems like every 15 minutes there's a commercial for buying gold on the mainstream talk show, whatever. Buying gold might be a sound investment if you believe the economy is going to survive. If you believe that system is going to make sense, then investing in some way in that system, well, then, yeah, that makes sense. My thing is, if I have a pile of gold here on my table and no fucking food in my house and nobody's, you know, nobody wants my gold, they want their food, my children starve. My suggestion as far as commodities are, you know, are the things you need, food, water, you know, fuck it, bullets, because you need to hunt, you need to do shit like that. And the one thing that I put out there as the commodity, the commodity I see us moving towards, should the economy collapse, should we see something where the people actually wake up and start doing for themselves, marijuana, I believe, will be the new commodity. Marijuana will be the new thing that we use as a unit of exchange. Because if you don't sell it for something else, if you don't trade it for something that you need, you can always smoke it. It always has value, inherent value in and of itself. Now, on this show, we do not suggest anybody do anything illegal. We do not suggest that anybody go out and cultivate their own marijuana, grow their own marijuana, and hoard it or store it. But those folks that have legal access to it, you know, as long as they're abiding by their state laws, in my mind, if I were in California right now, I think it'd be a good idea to make sure I put a little bit away, a little bit every month or whatever, from whatever little bit I got, to make sure that should the shit go away, should the shit hit the fan, I have that commodity that would be of value to trade with for things I need.
I absolutely agree with that. Another thing that I think was really important that we could do right now in preparation for these kind of things is learn certain things. Learn, you know, basic carpentry. Learn you know, basic metalworking, learn how to work on engines and learn how mechanics work, you know, taking those kind of steps and educating yourself and give you the ability to always be able to, you know, build a shelter that's stable and secure, you know, create whatever mechanical devices you might need to, you know, harvest the area that you're settling in at the time. You know, investing in and knowing how to do these kinds of things seems to me to be, you know, the intelligent way to go. Learn skills, because skills are something, a commodity that is always tradable. Where marijuana is perishable, and though that's a great idea, you know, ultimately, if you have a bag of pot under your bed for a month, it's dust. You know what I'm saying? So.
Right.
But your skills, you can always trade your skills. If you're good at building stuff, if you're good at fixing stuff, if you're good at, you know, growing stuff, these are things that are valuable and you can trade for survival because, you know, should we go back to an agricultural state, you know, the farmer is always going to need a field hand. And if the field hand's experienced, well, that just means there's that much more crop to feed everybody come the end of it. You know, it does him no good to have a barrel of food sitting on his table when it'll all rot before it's eaten. But, you know, if there's, you know, some kind of production going on that level, if he has people that are participating, you know, that kind of thing creates a more stable and what I would like to say, fertile environment.
No, I agree with that totally. And that would be the next thing that I would suggest while you're, you know, divesting yourself of your material goods, while you're
investing in things you need and commodities that you need, definitely improving your skill sets would be ideal. One of the things I'm looking at is the SAS Survival Guide, the Strategic Air. I forget what the other S stands for. It's a British survival guide that covers, you know, what's edible and what's not, how to build shelters, how to do just about anything you would need to do out in the wilderness. But knowing basic engine repair, knowing, you know, how to make beer, knowing how to make butter, knowing how to do any of that shit, all these skills that were once commonplace that now are so far outside our skill sets as individuals. Mark Twain wrote a story, and I must say, I may get the title wrong, a Kentuckian in King Arthur's court, where this story was basically, the premise of the story was just a statement on the skill set and the knowledge within the common man of his age, that the common man understood things about, you know, electrical work, understood things about, you know, mechanics, understood things about astronomy, understood things about, you know, the movement of the planets and different things that gave him this huge advantage amongst people who had none of these skill sets, none of this knowledge. Well, here we are. Well, what do we know? We know American Idol. We know how to find shit on Google. We know how to, we know how to fucking rack up a debt on a credit card. You know, we lack these skills. So definitely developing a set of, you know, skills that are not only self-sustaining but tradable is more than a requirement, I think, as far as developing an exit strategy.
Absolutely. It's interesting because the idea already kind of exists. I mean, I'm thinking about Ken here sitting in the chat room, and I'm going to pick on your bald ass, Ken. But Ken is trained in computers. That's what he does. I think he actually works in networking. But what happens when the internet actually collapses, and there's no more mass communication out there? What then does knowing how to design a website or set up a virtual private network do to benefit you? Now, Ken, fortunately, is an ex-Marine, so he has some basic skills that he's been trained in already. But beyond that, I mean, the extent of his career choice doesn't really help him in, the primitive man sense.
Right. Well, yeah, and the hunter-gatherer sense. But the other thing is that as far as Ken's skill sets are concerned, even in that, that environment, there are certain things that you need to know about electrical systems. There are certain things you need to know that might have some value given, if the shit were to hit the fan. Yeah, he might not be able to network with the whole fucking world, but he might be able to take advantage of, derelict computer systems in a building where power is being generated and give the building more security. So there's some advantages there depending on the situation. Ken's an ex-Marine, and I have no doubt that if the shit were to hit the fan tomorrow, I'd hope that Ken would be around the fucking block so that, as one guy that I could look to go, all right, we're getting the fuck out of here, and could count on him.
Right on. And, I like picking on Ken's chrome dome, just because he's fun to pick on. But ultimately, I wasn't trying to devalue anything that he actually knows. I was just making the point that you have to prioritize what you know. In the ultimate, nuclear holocaust situation, which I'm just, throwing this out there as an extreme example and not a likely thing anymore, Ken's Marine training is going to be more valuable to him than his training in computers.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is, again, while we're talking about gloom and doom, we're talking about, definitely negative scenarios. I don't want anybody to think that we're taking on the survivalist mentality. The survivalist mentality are these people that prepare for that scenario, that prepare for the end of the world, the collapse of civilization or whatever, and to such an extreme, they're so invested in it that they actively hope it occurs, that they run around going, I can't wait
feed that freeze-dried ice cream. I can't wait to be, you know, to test my electric perimeter or whatever. I can't wait to have that opportunity. It's, again, it's dancing that fine line between being prepared and needing the classes of society to profit from being prepared, and being prepared but still engaged enough that your preparedness is maintained, that you're continually staying sharp, but you're still involved in the system so that should it never collapse, you're still benefiting from your involvement.
Right on. And real quick, Jason, we've got a caller on the air, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on, all
right? Right on.
917, you're on the ooze.
Hey, what's going on? Hello?
What's
how's
up, man?
Hello?
Hey, how's everything? Get a little feedback. Let me just turn down my computer a little bit. Yeah, I was just enjoying some of the points you were bringing up, you know.
I apologize. I don't know how it is in the chat room, but you are really muffled. It's really difficult to make out anything you're saying. So at this point, I haven't understood anything you've said up to now. I'm waiting to see if somebody in the chat room has the same problem.
Hello, is that better?
Yeah, that is better. It's much more clear.
Oh, okay. Yes, I take out these headphones. They're kind of broke. But, yeah, I was just enjoying some of the stuff you guys were saying on the level of survival. It's really important, you know, but not to get too far outside society, like a survivalist mentality, you know, but definitely to have the skills, you know, needed to be able to operate, you know, when things start shifting, you know. So, yes, my viewpoint on it is just to kind of, kind of always be prepared for whatever goes down and not to get too much into the media sweep of things, but just be able to observe on one's own accord, you know, what's happening, you know. Yeah, to me that's like on some levels operating from that fly man vantage point, you know. So.
Right. I think it's what we're talking about is being prepared to move, being prepared to take action. Not so much being so invested in it that now you're painted yourself into a corner, but also not being, you know, in either way, whether it's the survivalist mentality or the system, not being so invested in either one that you find your options limited.
Yeah, definitely. I think the economy has gotten to a place where we got so far from just the basic essentials of food, shelter, and clothing as being the main principles for human society, you know. And, you know, a lot of money was, I guess, you know, people are marketed towards things that exist outside of that. But I think if a person kind of keeps the primary focus basic on those things, you know, they'll kind of keep aware of, like, what's going on with the system and where they stand with that and how they can move and operate, as well as, like, you know, learning different skills that can help protect them in the future, you know. I think that's really important.
I just wanted to pop on real quick and clarify for everybody who this is, because it just like clicked in my mind. This is actually this is our friend Messiah here. This is Warlock Asylum. What's up, man?
What's going on? Yeah. So it's interesting though, because both you guys made two points that had just kind of recently crossed my mind. One was, I think Igor had mentioned, like, being aware of certain things like astronomy and stuff like that. I guess, like, just even with the point of, like, navigation, which what people used to be able to do in ancient times is look up and see where they were at, you know what I mean? And it's interesting because I'm not sure if I've spoken to TC earlier. It was somewhere earlier this week, but the I do study astrology. It's one of the first things I had studied, but I've known, like, on an astrological level, we're dealing like with Uranus and Aries. And the last time that happened, Uranus stays in the sign for like 7 years. But the last time Uranus was in Aries was the Great Depression. Stock market crash, and then 7 years later we went to the Great Depression. So that's kind of like the influence that we're getting down from that planet at this point in time, you know. But it's just something to kind of be aware of, I guess, more or less than to submit to. But the other thing I want to mention, I think in reference to someone you had mentioned earlier who's an ex-Marine who dealt with the computer networking and stuff like that, it kind of reminds me of like a little bit of the Book of Eli with this guy, this movie that came out, and how, you know, people had to do trading and all the sorts of different things of that nature, you know. So, but to me, basically, it seems like it's kind of pretty evident, clear-cut, where stuff is kind of going now with the major corporations. They're not so much really concerned about the low man on the totem pole because they're not really bounded to the country that these businesses are operating on. Like over here, they can just employ people overseas, bringing the products and different things of that nature. So when that starts going on, just from my perspective, it seems like the that whole economical scheme will shift. I really don't think it will ever come back to something that we may have seen like in the 80s or early 90s or different times prior until certain regulations are put forth on a corporate level. So in the meantime, I look at it as like a little bit of a grace period before the storm, not to get to operate from a fear perspective, but just a perspective of just being aware of what's going on in society today. You know.
No, I agree, and I think the matter. As a matter of fact, if a storm is coming, the only reason you have to be afraid of the storm is because you haven't prepared for it. You're not aware of what the storm could entail, and you're not ready to deal with it. When the Depression occurred, when the Great Depression occurred, not everybody suffered. There were actually people that profited during the Great Depression. Most of them were self-sufficient. Most of them were so far away from the markets and so far outside the system that when they were told there was a Great Depression, they were like, what are you talking about? We're doing fine. Everything's good here. The thing is that now our society is so engaged and so invested in these different systems that if there's an economic collapse, it's going to affect all of us because you're going to take those dollar bills out of your wallet and go down to Walmart to buy groceries, and if they're open, they're going to tell you we're not accepting that here.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's just a time like to have, like, if it's possible, maybe like a little bit of investment into natural resources at some levels, you know, of what that could be, you know, for like a working man or whatever, you know. If that bounces back, then it may just go back into like more of a system of trade, you know, just basically trade and bargaining, you know. But you're right, though, there were like people to profit off of that time period during the Great Depression. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of it was just on the levels of just having ideas and seeing that, okay, like something else is coming in new. So let's just kind of foregleam what that those possibilities could be and try to work on amplifying that. Because I guess during the Great Depression, after that came a little bit more heavily like the industrial age, mechanics, a little bit more of like the electronic things with the television, the radio became more household items. So I would expect that in this shift, something else may turn over. You know, that could be possible for those who kind of like look more into the future to see what is that coming up, you know, or just basically just what's present now that just needs to be up boosted.
Hopefully, I don't know if we're going to have that kind of recovery this time around. That's my concern. I think that if we get burned this time around, enough people are going to look at capitalism and go, you know what, it's not worth investing in. And I'm looking up real quick. I sent TC a link to this this economic theorist. Hey, here it is. I'm pulling it up right now, and I'm going to look at what this guy was about. An economic theorist who said that what he sees us moving towards, this guy developed the law of the social cycle. He's a Indian philosopher and spiritual leader. I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name, Prabhat Rajan Sarkar. He was doing his thing in the 1950s. And this has been expanded on by Ravi Bhartra since the 1970s and a few others. But basically, he points to an economic system where we're going to move away from these large, overwhelming, you know, means of trade, these, you know, these dollars, these symbols that we use that have no meaning. And we're going to move more towards small groups, more towards back to that village or community mentality, who exchange among themselves
and then trade with other small groups for things that they might, you know, they might want or need. That's where we're going to be moving back towards. It used to be there was a time when, I mean, every city-state in Italy printed their own coins, printed their own money, and it was just, you know, what was the metal, what was the grade of the metal, and what was that value where it was being traded. And that's what determined value. And I, as I pointed out in the show, I don't see precious metals being the way to go in the future because at the end of the day, can you eat a coin? You know, so I see whatever commodity we'd use as a mean of measure of trade being something that's more, has a real inherent value, you know, whatever it happens to be.
Yeah, I definitely can see that. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be like the perspective maker of the new millennium coming through, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, it's interesting. It's very interesting, you know. Because up in New York here, we just kind of experienced this whole thing with this hurricane, you know. And I'm kind of looking at it because of how people respond to certain media actions instead of just taking the action. Like, you know, like a hurricane is coming. So this is some basic things to do, like, not really stay in the house, be in a place that's safe, and just get a couple of things that you may need in the house because you don't need to go out for a little while, you know. Mm-hmm. But it seemed more on this hemisphere that people didn't respond to that until they were told to do so, you know. So I think it's interesting, you know, it's interesting. You have some people who like the lead, which I guess has always been a majority, you know, in some aspects. And those who can kind of work a little bit more independently. Like you have some people out in, I guess, the West, the Midwest, where they're already stocked with stuff. You know, not so much more of a survivalist mentality, but just like, look, you know, something goes down, got a few guns in the house, got some extra water in the backyard, in the shed, or whatever, some canned goods, and just some things that I may need to know or just need to do, you know, just in case the time of emergency comes, just as a basic setup. You know, but I think from that perspective, then a person can start building up on, like, skills and things that they need to survive. I think that should be something that should be done anyway, regardless of the threat of what's luminous over us, is just to be able to build, because it gives you more of a perspective, wider, and more ability to survive in the system, or if you have to go into another country, you know.
Right. And I think it's a matter of, and as far as having the developing those skills, I don't think you should, like, the hurricane, I was going to ask you how that was going down, so don't let me forget about that. But as far as developing these skills, as far as, you know, these are things that I don't think we should be waiting for the figurative hurricane to come before we engage these skills. I think if, part of the Sly Man process is that if you develop a skill that's, you know, that's something you can trade, that's something you can use to get things for yourself, that's something that is in demand, well, then you put that skill to use now. You don't wait for it. Unfortunately, with the hurricane, fortunately, with the hurricane, there were warnings. You know, there was an alert system. There were people interested in telling you, hey, man, there's a hurricane, get ready. With what's coming down, with whatever's coming down, there will be no warning. As a matter of fact, if the government, if the system can keep you blissfully ignorant of what's going on, they will. If your house is on fire and it's to the government's best interest for you to think the house is not on fire, they will tell you your house is not on fire while you watch it burn. So it's going to be a matter of us taking those steps ourselves, and we shouldn't wait for the alarm to be sounded. If you can do these things now, you should be doing them now.
Yeah, definitely.
So how is that?
Yeah.
How did the hurricane affect you, man? Are you doing all right?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're good up here. Thanks. Yeah, we're good. Everybody's, you know, like we're in New York, it was like just a basic storm or whatever. I mean, it's interesting because we had the earthquake, the like slight tremor early in the week, you know. So then I heard this thing about this hurricane. So okay, this is going to be a storm, you know, a tropical storm or whatever, because I did, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I did study, like, the cloud gazing. We're looking to see what the upcoming weather is, like, 3 to 4, 5, 6 days in advance. And they was like, my arm is going to be a storm, you know, go get all these food supplies and all that kind of stuff. I was like, it ain't going to be that serious. That is what they think it is, you know. And sure enough, that's what the outcome was. You know, I mean, it was like a lot of, there was some damage done more like in the Southern Jersey area, which is about, I guess, 2 or 3 hours from here, you know, maybe through public transportation or maybe like an hour and a half driving. A lot of the streets were flooded and stuff like that, you know. But for the most part, people just kind of just stayed in and just kind of did their thing, you know. It wasn't too bad in the city. Actually, most of the stuff should be up and running by tomorrow, you know. So,
right on.
Yeah. But like you mentioned, the way the government kind of put it out there, you know, they'll have you, like, you know, doing some stuff, because when they had the earthquake thing happen, there were people who just left. You know, they just left work or whatever, you know. But
right.
Then there were people who was like, you know, oh, you know, PA announcements I heard at the office, like, oh, you know, you could just stay, remain seating, it's just the earthquake. And this was the same thing that happened in 9/11. You know, one tower gets hit by a plane, and the second tower, they're telling people, oh, go back to work, don't worry about it, you know. And basically the people that survived were the ones who acted on their own accord. You know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
So, yeah, it's kind of like a similar situation. Like you said, you can't really wait for the government. You've got to kind of foresee what's going on now. You know what I'm saying? What's going on now? But the way I kind of see things, you know, it's funny, Ego mentioned what you mentioned earlier about I don't see things going back and evolving into something better out of this. I just see things, like you said, just kind of downsizing. But, you know, one of my concerns, too, is that, you know, like during the Great Depression, there was probably like a little bit of a different moral value on life than people may have now. You know what I'm saying? You know, so,
right.
You know, that's something else to take in consideration. Just even have, like, certain survival skills as far as, like, self-defense. Just not so much like I'm going to kick somebody's ass, but just being aware of just what's around you, you know?
Right, absolutely, absolutely. And I think one of the skills I think should be developed is the thing that you were just talking about, and again, you know, an allegory in my mind, is that ability to look at the signs for yourself and to make a decision for yourself if it's as bad as they say it's going to be, or if it's not as bad, or if they're saying it's not as bad and actually is going to be worse. You know, having that ability to make that determination for yourself is huge, because, you know, it's your ass that's on the line. You know, if you're looking to become the government, I don't think the government is concerned about us as much as they should be, or as much as they pretend to be. So absolutely,
yeah.
Having that kind of innate talent to go, okay, this is what I see going down. It's time for me to either get the hell out of Dodge, or I'll stick around, or whatever. That's huge. That's important. And I agree also that, you know, it's not just a matter of, you know, knowing some, you know, being able to, you know, change a battery on a car. That's going to be helpful. But it'd also be a good idea for you to be able to at least convince people that you know how to kick some ass, because the same value of life is not there today that we've come to expect. Especially, I think, those of us who grew up, you know, through the 70s and 80s or whatever, you see these flash mobs and everything else. It's going to be, if it gets bad, it's going to be ugly. If the shit hits the fan. It's going to be a different world, and like I told TC, I said in the last show, it's those of us who grew up believing in the American ideal, believing in everything we were told about, you know, America, mom, and apple pie. It's going to be us that have the hardest time adjusting.
Yeah, that's true, because it's definitely different now. Think about this thing that happened with that Hurricane Katrina and all the stuff that was going on. But then the other side of the point was just like you really saw the animal side of man in that. You know, people looting, you know, like they're on television and it's like they're walking through 4 feet of water, not realizing what's going on and stuff like that. You know, people getting raped, you know, like all this sort of thing. You're in the middle of a disaster in the United States, you know. So, although, you know, for the most part, I imagine people did just want to just kind of just survive and just spend time with their families and different things like that. But there's this other current that's going on, I guess, when people feel that there's no one looking or whatever, or they just have the opportunity to kind of just wild out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's really kind of sad, but it's just what it is, you know. So.
Right.
You just have to be prepared for it, you know. you know, just have to be prepared for it. But I think, you know, things are kind of developing like that, you know, slowly. I don't, you know, I imagine at a certain point in time there will be like a total or breakdown. But I think that when things gradually happen slowly, the people involved, like the people in our country, they don't take a real quick look at it, you know, because it's so slow it sneaks up on you. Like if you look at, like, let's say, the economy or just, well, that, the 80s thing was a little bit different because of the Reaganomics and what he was putting in. But if you just look at things just even like on the moral structure or however people want to call it, let's say maybe 15 years ago and today, just what the government was doing in relationship to the people and today, it was a massive change. But because it's so gradual, people remain asleep. But if you give them that shot, from my opinion, I think it's just that, you know, it's like people just pushing the envelope and then receding just to see what will happen, just to see how the public will react, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just to get an idea of how to set up things, you know what I mean? Like when I was in the military during Desert Storm, but I wasn't in Desert Storm. I was over in Norway in the Marines. So when I got back, I was going downtown to New York City. I grew up in the suburbs, but I was went to Manhattan. And it was a time period where they had the three, the Allied forces together, France, aspects of Russia, and the United States. So I'm looking at these guys with backpacks on. You know, this is probably like maybe in the mid-90s. And they were surveilling, like, the area of Harlem. Now, I knew they wasn't, like, from, you know, like, from the country because of the way they dressed. But then I saw, like, the accents. And, you know, when you're fresh in the military, you can identify all the troops from different places. I was like, oh, these are military dudes, but they were surveilling the area. You know what I'm saying? So I think they just kind of keep it just pushing, pulling back, you know, until they can just totally enforce things. By the time you figure it out, then you're already, like, just already caught up in it, you know. So that's how I kind of perceive it. Because when I was listening to the show earlier, I heard TC mention something about, like, people sell weed and stuff like that, you know what I mean? But sometimes, you know, if you get a chance to go on YouTube, you find, like, these dudes doing, like, major SWAT team bust, you know, just to check somebody who has, like, maybe, like, you know, like a dime of herb or something like that, you know,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, they can go inside your house without a warrant now under certain conditions, you know what I mean? You know, so
right.
It's like they're gradually, like, pulling things, you know, from the people, but since the people are so disenfranchised because it's, like, preoccupied with all these, you know, like, games and stuff, which nothing is wrong with, but to be preoccupied with it, the community doesn't have the same unity or whatever to do some revolt action, which they may have happened, like, 40 years ago. You know, so in another aspect, then one just has to kind of look out and just, you know, look above all that and just to make preparations for survival, you know what I mean? Just on some really deep levels, you know.
I think TC mentioned a show or two ago, he quoted Ben Franklin. Ben Franklin, you know, happens to be one of my favorite founding fathers. I think it was Franklin that said, and TC was the one who brought up the quote, that the person who's willing to trade security for freedom deserves neither. And that's what we see going on, is that we're trading security for freedom. We're becoming less secure. We're becoming less free. And it's gradual. It's, you know, the idea of a frog being in a pot of boiling water. If you throw a frog into boiling water, it will hop out. But if you gradually turn the temperature up on that frog, it'll sit there until it boils to death. And this is what's being done to our society. This is what we see going on. You know, the slime mentality, again, is that idea of, you know, you do for yourself and you work with others who already have the mentality, who are already awake. I don't think you necessarily go out and try to awake people. You don't try to get people going. Because just like TC mentioned earlier in the show, here we are talking about these topics and people tune out. They don't want to hear the stuff.
Yeah.
They're not interested. So if they're not interested, they're tuning out. Well, then they're not part of the solution we're talking about. They're not part of what we're trying to institute here.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what else I was going to say there. I lost my train of thought, which happens quite often on the show on the Ooze, the Outbreak Edition.
I wanted to ask you while I'm trying to gather myself here. You mentioned that you're into. I know that you have some interest in astrology and everything. One of the things that's caught my attention that is along these same lines, these same ideas. We always talk about the Mayan, the 2012 thing, the end of the Mayan, the end of the world according to the Mayan calendar, what have you. They're always looking at different natural disasters that might occur. One of the things that they're actually talking about possibly happening in the next 2 or 3 years is a major solar storm, a major solar flare kind of situation. Solar flares, as far as my research has been involved, is it really would have no impact on the biological life on the planet. You and I would not notice a solar flare, the Earth going through a solar flare. But our electrical systems have been significantly impacted by solar flares in the past. Back when they did everything by wire, basically, the little tap-tap thing that they would do, and they would send transmissions via wire, there was a solar storm and set enough of these wires sparking everything else that these different relay stations are catching fire. And recently there was one in Quebec that wiped out their electrical, their power grid. They were out without power for days. But what people are saying that follow these kind of things, they're saying that the next solar storm, that we're moving into a potential solar phase, where we're going to have these kinds of solar storms, these flares that will last for months, possibly years. And I'm wondering, you know, if astrologically, if there's any indicator as far as what you've seen along those lines.
Well, I know recently there was I did hear about a flare hitting China, you know, not that long ago. Maybe it's like about 2 months ago. Astrologically, I haven't really read anything on that sort of direction about that possibility, although I do know like the sun's reaction is getting a little bit more frequent than it used to be. You know what I'm saying? We're dealing like there's two things that's going on in the atmosphere. One is that it's interesting that you mentioned that is that there was definitely some shifts going on as far as like how the sun and the earth relate. I know like the North Star, Polaris, it is like a couple of degrees off where it used to be 40 years ago, 40, 50 years ago. But those couple of degrees is about 40 miles. So the North Star is like 40 miles different from where it used to be when my grandfather used to look at it. You know what I'm saying? So there's definitely like some earth shifting heavily that's going on, you know. With the increase of natural disasters, it's interesting too because Uranus in Aries is the planet of social change. Now, Discover Magazine recently, this was like last year's edition, I tried to get the actual article, I could send you the information, but they have mentioned that scientists now confirm that planets do send signals to each other, you know. So Jupiter normally stays within a zodiac sign for 1 year, but when Uranus moved into Aries, Jupiter cut it off in 5 months. Like Jupiter's the protector planet, but now Jupiter is moved on. You know what I'm saying? It's moved on to Taurus. So now Uranus and Aries, that's the movement of social change. That was the thing that sparked off the revolution in the 60s. You had eight planets in the sign of Aquarius with Uranus rules. You know what I'm saying? So in this aspect, you're going to see like a lot of changes in the weather conditions. Plus, it's in the fiery stage now. You know, so you're going to see like a lot of shifts in consciousness and also like a lot of like climatic storms and things of that nature. A lot of climatic storms. So this thing with the hurricane, the earthquake, you know, I could possibly relate it to that. Even in that period where it was in the sign of Aries the last time, because it stays in the sign for 7 years, we had the great hurricane that hit New York in 1938. So I was looking at this thing with the storm. I was like, okay, this is like a replay because there's a certain influence that's going to bring back around again. You know what I mean? But as far as like the sun is concerned, I know definitely we're going to a hotter phase of that. They say probably within like the next 5 years, the sun's heat will be, it would be a good percentage higher than what it is now. As far as like the flare frequency, I think it's between the years 2012 and 2014. You know, so that's a deeper aspect of survival. That's kind of, you know, like it's just being at the right place at the right time, you know. It's being at the right mm-hmm. place at the right time. I would definitely think that's where one's spiritual eye kind of comes into play a little bit more. Because Gurdjieff, I forget what book it was in. I think it was in Search of the Miraculous, or it was in one of the series by Maurice Nicole. He mentioned that what keeps a man in prison is his zodiac sign, his experiences, and his cultural identity. So he recognized that there is an influence that the stars play, but in the work, you kind of rise up above that a little bit, you know what I mean? You know, so in the prospect of that, his perspective from what I've read, you know, was just that when one's kind of in tune with that, it'll put you in a place that's outside of that way. You know what I mean? You know, but in some aspects, right. you know, from the Mayan perspective, and even with the Judaic Kabbalic perspective on some levels, they were under the opinion that, you know, a man gets a certain way, the forces of nature will check them. You know what I'm saying? You know, mm-hmm. so it's possible that some of this stuff could kind of put us back at the ground zero to start off again. Because if you just wipe out electricity, then, you know, there's nothing too much you can do.
Right.
You know, things
right.
go
and
back
that was
to the basic level.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that this potential solar storm they're talking about doing, wiping out a power grid, even, you know, shutting down cars that run on, you know, some sort of electrical system. You know, cars manufactured sometime after some point in the 1980s. And one of the things, you know, one of my fears hearing this thing is that my girlfriend or my daughters or whatever will be somewhere on I-35, a major highway here in Texas, and all of a sudden their car stopped along with every other car on the highway. So now their 15-minute drive just turned into, you know, an 8-hour, 9-hour walk. And between them and the safety of my home are, you know, is every animal out there that knows that the police had to walk the same distance to get to them. So it's, you know, it's
wow.
the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, you know, their change is coming. I think we all recognize this. No matter how we look at these things, their change is coming. There's a shift coming in the way we do things, whether it's a slow shift due to the evolution of our society, the change in our economy, or something drastic that occurs, changes are coming, and you can be one of two ways about it. You could either be afraid of it because you're unprepared and you're unwilling to make the proper adjustments, or you can be prepared for it and not afraid. And, you know, personally, I choose to, you know, I would prefer not to be afraid rather than fear things.
Yeah, definitely, because fear would just have you, it'll just have you just caught up in it even more so, you know, in a certain way, you know. You can't really survive in fear, you know. But I definitely
right.
agree with that.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But it is some changes that are coming, I mean, on many levels, you know, on a lot of different levels, you know, from weather to the economy to just a lot, just in all areas of life, things are just shifting, you know. And I think it's better just to ride with that wave and just be prepared, you know, just prepare ourselves as much as we can. I think basically, essentially, the work of the Sly Man puts one in that perspective, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it kind of puts one in that perspective because they're coming aware of all things where other people are just, they kind of put to sleep, I think, as both of you mentioned earlier, by the mass media and just their own preconceptions of what life will be rather than seeing it for what it is, you know. And once a person can kind of see just things that clearly, then they could just move in and out around accidents and causes and effects, not even so much on like, you know, brought up on a mystical level, but just being aware, like, look, I just need to survive. A person has that perspective day to day, and not in a way that's grudging, like, I got to, you know, pull the next man's mouth out or something like that, but just, like, this is the life that I want to have, so this is what I need mm-hmm. to do. I kind of sincerely believe that although there's, like, a lot of corruption on certain levels, when you get to the high levels of, like, class in the economy and stuff like that, but on some levels, people who are kind of outside those boxes but still have acquired a lot of wealth, or they've done by being able to maneuver in and out where other people are blinded and trapped in. You know, it's just like an essence that they have today, just to move in and out of just situations. Like, okay, you know, I can see where this is going to be going on here in America. So let me just, you know, either just move to a different location and move abroad, you know, and just set up shop there, you know, just do something to that effect, because I thought it would just be better for me, just less stressful for me, you know. It's
right.
Kind of one of the things I've been thinking about in New York, because it's like we had the World Trade Center thing going on, hurricanes, earthquakes, a couple of blackouts. You know, we got the mayor who breaks the law, and, you know, he runs for election a third time. You know, he kind of pays for all that to happen. And there's just so much other stuff. So it's telling me, like, okay, maybe New York is just not the place to be. I mean, like, when you see all these things going on in one city, it's just like, okay, this is just not the place to be. You know, the rent is going skyrocket up. You know, like, you see, like, hundreds of people, like, teenagers selling themselves on the West Side, you know, because they're homeless and stuff like that. Like, okay, this is not good. You know what I'm saying? This is just not the place to be at. You know, you know. So it's when you see stuff like that going on, you know, it's just telling you signs, like, okay, this is going to hit home one day. Or, you know, like, just have to kind of just move out of that realm. You know, it's kind of like if you're in a thunderstorm, you know, it's constantly raining on you, like, this has happened, this has happened, this has happened. Just go inside the house and just, you know, move out the way of the storm. You know what I mean?
Right.
But on the level of how it's put out, when it's exaggerated, like just in different forms of experiences, it seems like, you know, okay, we, you know, like government's trying to convince the people we can do all this patchwork, you know. But personally, I think that the government, they sold us out. They sold the people out to the corporation, you know. So the corporations have their way over the government, you know. Like lobbying was done before, but now it's done at a massive amount level. You know, so basically it's just like the corporations are ruling. You're taxing the blind in Florida, but the guy from GE who makes like $1 billion, yeah, you're not giving him no taxes. You know what I'm saying? So it's pretty much like they just sold us out. So these corporations, they can set up anywhere they want to in the world. You know what I'm saying? They got labor over here. They're selling us products over here and stuff like that. So it's like yourself and Jason was saying, it's just a whole other type of deal that's getting ready to go down, or just going down the process now. You know, all this coverage I was thinking today, like with the hurricane and all that kind of stuff, it's like, okay, what else is going on in the world? I'm seeing like Fidel Castro television 24 hours about the hurricane. I don't know what's going on in the Middle East. I don't know what's going on in Russia, China, stuff just about the hurricane that just turned out to be a tropical storm, you know, at the end of the day, you know. But it's not telling me what's going on in other parts of the world, because maybe there's some stuff I might need to know, or some stuff that's trying to be stopping me from knowing.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, well, we got about 7 minutes left. Now, TC's trying to get in. That's fine. I'm echoing and everything. So, man, I appreciate you calling in, and do call in again, because...
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I enjoyed the show. Yes, it's excellent. Excellent form. You know, I meant to post... I'm going to try to post some of the stuff up on the page, on the gate page when you guys are doing this, because it's really good to provide the information, you know. I mean, like you said, for those who want it, you know, but, if not, you know, they still be aware of it, you know. So you have a good night.
Right on, man.
Okay, I'll catch you later.
Thanks, Ben.
Okay. All right.
Later.
Awesome. That's it. That it amazes me how much insight that dude has. I didn't realize he made mention in his commentary that he actually served during the time of Desert Storm. I'm guessing that puts him a couple years your senior.
I got in on the tail end. I actually got in on tail end in 1991, so I was in basic training, and Desert Storm was declared over about a week before I graduated from basic training. So, he's probably a little older than I am. But the dude has a lot of good ideas, and it's interesting when he speaks. The allegory, you know, he's talking about one topic, and it's applicable in a number of different ways to different ideas. And, you know, you take it on a practical level, like I do. I take a lot of things on a practical level. And I'm looking forward to his input on in the future, and an end in mind, and
you know, maybe even getting him on the Ooze to just sit down and bullshit for an hour. Kind of like we did tonight. That'd be great.
Right on, man. I absolutely agree. For anybody who's interested, you can check out Warlock Asylum's website at warlockasylum.wordpress.com. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning of this show. I guess it definitely doesn't hurt to throw in the plug there later. This is what I consider to be another Sly Man. A lot of stuff that he's talking about is definitely it's layered, and I believe that it's meant to be layered. It always has been. They talked about things on a mystical level because it was the only way that you could relate a reoccurring theme that happened on different levels. You know, Gurdjieff talked about how, you know, when countries warred here on Earth, entire solar systems and faraway galaxies, you know, collided and crashed. And there's definitely an interconnectivity that I don't think that we can deny. I think at this point, whether there's enough scientific evidence to back it or not, you have to look at, you know, the state of the world's deteriorating at almost the exact same state that society's deteriorating at. You know, there's been these weird weather phenomenons that have happened. A couple of years ago, here in Florida, we had the coldest winter Florida's ever had. The summers here are grueling compared to what they were 20 years ago.
Right on. And so, everything is in a state of flux. Everything is, there's a shift going on. And if in a way, for those of us who are willing to take advantage of those things, for those of us who already have been, you know, trying to learn how to push ourselves, trying to learn how to push our reality, this is an exciting time. Because that state of flux that the world is in just means opportunities for some of us. It just means, you know, that a chance to really, you know, test our mettle as it were, and see if we can actually make some things happen. Now we've got about 3 minutes left in the show. Real quick, I guess I just wanted to kind of talk about how there's an idea that TC's talking about on the website mmind.info, and folks can check that out, because next week when we have our next discussion, I think I want to start focusing on that. We've kind of talked a little bit about what I would call stage one of the exit strategy, which is individual and, you know, preparedness, basically, where you're preparing yourself, you're preparing your family, you're gathering the materials you need, you're gathering, you know, you're developing the skills you'll need, you're getting your family prepared, you've got your own individual exit strategy, your own plan in place. And the next thing we want to talk about is this function of what to do in a larger community of like-minded people. This idea of clans that TC is developing on eminentmind.info. So I think that should be the thing we talk about next week.
Yeah, I'm absolutely down for that. There's a whole bunch of different things that I think interrelates. And I mean, obviously there's strength in numbers, but when the numbers are so vast that, you know, the individuals participating in it are drowned out, that's where the danger really happens. So In my mind, moving beyond, you know, just an immediate clan existence or a small community existence is where our fault happens. And, you know, if we just kind of tended to our own backyard and worked as a community in that manner, I think that we would be in a lot better shape. But we'll save all that for next week. Fucking 2 hours blown by. I didn't get to touch on everything that I wanted to touch on. That's how deeply integrated this stuff is. One of the things that I was talking about was the idea that we should
90 seconds.
We should start developing, you know, newer weapons or experimenting with weapons ideas that are potentially not non-lethal, but ways to defend your, you know, your home state without actually inflicting a lethal state if necessary. Anyway, there's only about a minute left. I don't know, Jason, if you got my emails, but I sent you
60 seconds.
the PSD files for some of the artwork as I found it today. So.
Right on.
Right
on.
Right on. Sorry about the echo. I forgot to fucking click the microphone button, and after it being off for so long, I guess I just felt it needed to be on. But we got 30 seconds left. I don't think there's anything left to really cover. So should I just go ahead and roll the outro?
Roll it,
roll
man.
We're out.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is your discretion to come along. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?